Richard Price has got a new book out. He doesn't. Harry Brandt has a new book out. Richard Price is writing as Harry Brandt. And Richard Price, I'm sure you know him from the books and that he's written. Lush Life was a big smash a few years ago. But he's also done a ton of movies. He did Son of Shaft. Not the original Shaft, but Son of Shaft. And he actually made it into an actual believable movie, which was kind of amazing. He did some of the other ones here. Color of Money, that was him. New York Stories, Sea of Love, Night in the City, Clockers, Ransom, Shaft, The Wire. He wrote for The Wire. Wow. A new one coming out called Child 44, but he's a novelist, and he does that stuff for money. Well, let's find out if that's true or not. Richard Price is on the line with us from New York. Hi, Richard. How are you this morning?
I'm pretty good. Still trying to wake up.
Yeah, I'm sorry about this. Did we wake you to do this? Or?
It's the crack of 11 here.
What is your usual rising hour? Do you have writer's hours where you get up at dawn and start writing for 6 hours? Or?
No, I usually, not dawn exactly. I usually get up whatever time I get up and religiously avoid writing for about 4 or 5 hours until I can't stand it, and then I write.
Really? That's a little unusual, isn't it? I mean, because don't you tend to put it off and then just never do it?
I don't know. There's a whole nation of writers who hate to write, and I'm one of them.
Really? Is that like a writer's block, or is that something else?
No, it's called fidustering. Do the crossword puzzle, go out and buy brand new pencils. It's like jogging, It's like preparing for 3 hours to jog for 20 minutes.
Yeah. And you got to do a book tour for this one, too, right?
Yeah, if it's Tuesday, it must be Belgium.
Yeah.
I just did 7 cities in 7 days, and then I'm coming out to Milwaukee later this week.
The high point.
I just want to take a photograph of home plate for the Milwaukee Braves in the parking lot of the Brewer Stadium.
Yeah.
Then I'm going to go home.
Yeah, that's it. Okay, pretty good. Were you a Milwaukee Braves fan?
I could tell you everybody that was on the 1957 Milwaukee Braves team that beat the Yankees.
Okay, shortstop?
Johnny Logan.
Second base?
I want to say Eddie Matthews, but he was third base.
Yeah.
Joe Adcock was first base.
Del
Crandall was the catcher.
Red Shane next. Second base.
Red Shane teams,
yeah.
Right, because he was on so many teams.
Yeah.
Then we had Felix Mantilla in the outfield.
Right.
Hank A. I can't remember the last guy's name. Hank A. something.
Yeah, A. something.
And Wes Covington.
Wes Covington, you're right.
Joey J. was a pitcher. Lou Burdett, Warren Spahn.
Yeah.
I was 7 years old, by the way.
Yeah. But this is all revenge.
And I am a Yankee.
Yeah, you're revenge because you're a Yankees fan. So you knew who to hate?
I hated the Yankees.
You hated the Yankees?
What? Yeah, I mean, they just about showed up with attaché cases. There was, it's like corporations and pinstripes. And, Milwaukee Braves were, the symbol of, like middle America. They didn't, they weren't a major media center. And, they took on U.S. Steel, and they beat them.
Yeah. Plus, we stole them from Boston. That's kind of cool, too.
Yeah. I have all my baseball cards at the Boston Braves.
Yeah.
So, another story for another time.
Yeah. But the Yankees were from the Bronx, though, as were you, right?
Well, yeah, so was the Bronx Zoo. I didn't like that either. I mean, I was a Dodgers fan, and, then by default, the Mets fan when the Mets came on the scene. Through Brooklyn Bun form, they lost their first 9 games, and then there was a headline when they won the 10th in the Daily News, and it said, a streak.
That's pretty good. You mentioned, or it is mentioned in your Wikipedia page for some reason, that you're a nice middle-class Jewish boy from the Bronx who ends up...
I said working class, not middle class.
Really? Because it's down there, it says middle...
Different.
It says middle
class. I
grew
up in a housing project. Yeah. My father drove a cab, but,
Oh. Well, you better edit that then, because that ruins the whole image.
Oh, no. Yeah, I'm going to say lower middle class says that.
Lower, yeah, everyone says that now. I read that everyone who earns $100,000 or more thinks they're lower middle class.
At this point it is. But my father always used to hate it because they used to say lower middle class and he would say, could you just please take the lower out or call us working class?
Really? But and you don't come from a cop family, do you? Because, I mean, everything
oh,
you
no,
do...
I never talked to a cop until I was an adult, you know.
and no, what was that circumstance?
The circumstance, well, I was hired to do, I came up with the idea of Sea of Love, which is the Al Pacino movie.
Right, great movie.
And, you know, and I realized I don't know anything about cops, so I just hooked up with a friend of a friend who is a detective in Jersey City. Next thing I knew, I was in the back of a squad car, and I just loved, I didn't love cops or dislove cops.
Yeah.
But I love what I could see when I was with cops. You see stuff you would never see on your own. You're never allowed to see on your own. Uh-huh. Or if you wanted to see it on your own, you wouldn't live to write about it.
Yeah. Such as what?
Oh, showing up at homicides, you know, breaking up a domestic fight, seeing a police unit attack a squad of dope dealers. I mean, you know, you go places where you'd have your head handed to you, you know, if you decided at 3 o'clock in the morning to go up in to a project's apartment that was basically, a drug den.
Yeah.
A couple of times where I almost had my parts shipped home, some encounters, but... You know, after a while, they kind of forgot about me, and I was the only guy without a bulletproof vest.
Yeah.
I had my steno pad in front of me for protection.
Really?
Yep.
So they break down the door, and you come in with your steno pad shortly thereafter?
Right, right. Yes. You know, cease, or I'll write about you. You know, it's like, You know, I mean, here are all these, like big athletic guys, you know, and they're all suiting up with their bulletproof vests, and each vest has, some kind of, gothic killer symbol on it, you know, or skull, flaming skull. They personalize their vests. And they're all ready to bust into an apartment. And these guys, each one could dismember me. And each of these guys would go in and go on, and here comes the writer at the end, you know.
Yeah.
And, all these guys, all the perps and everything, they would look at me, and they figured... And, you know, they look at my presence and they say, they call me, there's that Dustin Hoffman looking dude. You know, he's got to be a special prosecutor or something because he sure isn't a cop.
And he's got a steno pad.
Right. And, you know, he's taking notes just like your teacher.
Yeah. So, I mean, all right. So this changed your life, though, as far as a writer. And this is what you write about now. And these guys themselves, not just the whole crime deal, but these individuals themselves and their whole... sociology, mostly on NYPD. But what did you write before that? Domestic comedies or what? What I mean,
No. I wrote 4 novels in my 20s that were published.
Yeah.
And at that time, I really literally took that adage, write what you know. So I wrote about myself because I was in my 20s and I didn't know about anything.
Yeah.
And after the 4th book, even I couldn't read it. I was so bored. I mean, my therapist couldn't read it. He was bored.
Yeah. Easy to run out of life in your 20s, I think.
Yeah, I mean, what am I going to write about next? What I had for breakfast?
Yeah.
You know, and so I just stopped writing novels, and I spent 8 years writing screenplays. Hmm. And in that period of writing screenplays, I was forced to go outside myself, you know, to write about pool hustlers, to write about cops
color of money.
Photographers. And I discovered... Listen, I go on the road, hang out with pool hustlers, and guess what? I can write about pool hustlers.
Yeah.
You know, it sort of forced me out of myself, and I realized, write about what you know. Well, you can always learn something, and then you know that, too. And the whole world opened up to me when I came back and wrote Clockers and Freedom Land and Lush Life and now The Whites. It was based on just going out into the world, you know? Mm. It's like I've been going at writing... you know, it was like the world was an ocean, and I was going at it with a demitasse spoon, you know. And once I realized, just go out and learn something, and then you can write about that. You know, I was drowning, you know, in just things I wanted to know, wanted to learn about, so I could turn it into some kind of art.
Yeah.
And that's the way I am now. I just have to report everything. I can't write about something, you know, out of the back of my head. I just got to go out all the time. It's addicting, and it's a hell of a lot more fun than writing.
Yeah, interesting. But this unlocked something in yourself, besides just reporting it. I mean, there's something in you that relates to these guys. I mean, they're very complex individuals, the way you portray them there. They're both heroes and villains on the police force, and they got their own code of honor, code of ethics, and so forth. But so there must have been something in you that definitely related to that sociology part of it, I guess.
Well, look, I grew up, you know, I was, you know, a typical, I came from a Democratic family, American family. You always root for the underdog. And I spent as much time with these guys. I spent as much time with the police, you know, the customers of the police, as I did with the police. And what I responded to with these guys mm-hmm. is not heroic. What I responded to is the messiness of these people. You know, it's boring to write about somebody who's all one way. Mm-hmm. And so if you write and everything is black and white, it's dull. It's a polemic. And I've always felt like the most important there's no literature without respect for the gray areas. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to write about a hero, or, you know, a token hero, go for the ugly moments in his life. If you're going to write about a villain, go for the good moments, you know, and just make it as confusing as possible and ask the human being.
But as I understand it now, The Whites, your latest, and it's a great book, you are not writing as yourself. You're writing as someone called Harry Brandt. So was the idea that you were going to, just to make some money perhaps, or just to get through something quickly, put out a line of potboilers, kind of crime potboilers, and then save your energies
it's something like what you said. Originally, I wanted to do this for money. I wanted to write in a way I never wrote before. I wanted to do a strict genre book, like a tight urban thriller, bang, 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 turn a page, turn a page, turn a page. And it was supposed to take 4 to 6 months. Well, it took 4 years, and it came out like any other book under my name.
Yeah.
And so at this point, it was a miscalculation, to say the least, to put it under a pen name. I just thought I could write in a different way, but I've been writing one way for 41 years.
Yeah.
I was foolish to think. And frankly, at this point, I wish I never used that pen name. It's just confusing.
Yeah. Plus, it's bigger than yours on the cover.
Well, that was because it was a defensive thing, too. I thought, like, you know, to whoever's going to review the book, please don't beat me up as Richard Price and say, well, what's this? You know, it's so thin. But then it turned fat.
Yeah. You got the shades of gray in there. You can't live without complexity. Then they're complex characters.
I got all 50.
Yeah. And there's a body count that's bigger than most Shakespeare, I think.
Well, you know, there's no real violence in the book. It's just, I mean, these are detectives that detectives always show up after the fact. There's no physical combat. It's about where'd the guy go. You know, you're not called. You're not on the scene. That's a uniform. You're called afterwards. You know, hey, come on down here. We got a felony. And so then you come down. The guy's in the wind, and you're just basically staring at somebody in the hospital or somebody lying on the floor not moving.
Yeah. I do like to say that there's also a Jewish element among the police force, which up until now I have missed out on there being such a thing. So there's that's you know, for me, as the Jewish reader, I dug that. Because I like Jewish mobsters, for example. You know.
Well, you know, look, I'm Jewish too.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just, you know, you got to do that because, you know, Jews get a bad rap as, you know, cops, or, you know, are Catholic or Protestant. You know, my grandfather, for 2 minutes in the 1920s, was a cop. But then his mother said, you take that uniform off, and he did.
That sounds right. Yeah, so it's in there. Okay. I guess that's all I'm saying now. But the other thing, that the book itself is called The Whites, and the reference is in Moby Dick. And from what I've read, other crime authors and other police kind of writing about this, there is such a thing as this white, a collection of these are cases that these guys carry around with them their entire lives, right?
Well, actually, it's like, first of all, I made up the expression, the white. I mean, no cop has I mean, I just made it up, just like I made up the word clockers.
Yeah.
Basically, a white. I mean, I've met so many detectives who were obsessed with one case that might have been 6-7 years old, and in a sea of cases, that's the one that obsesses them because it interacts with something in their personal makeup, and it's very unique to them. And the other cops have no idea why this cop is obsessed with this particular case, but it's like they're Ahabs. And once they retire, they'll take the case files and take them to their house, and in their 50s, and they're calling, hey, nobody called the coffee man who served coffee to the guy we think did it, you know, and they're 10 years off the job, and they're making calls. And so they're Ahabs, and not the crimes, but the perps are their great whites, and so I just call them whites.
Yeah, and now this sort of knowledge comes from more than ride-alongs, though, right? You must have spent some...
Yeah.
Did you live with these guys for a while? Or, I mean, how did that work?
No, I'm straight. no, when you say, did I live with these... Live with who, the cops?
Yeah, because, I mean, this is beyond just riding along and see what happens.
All I ever did with these guys is hang out.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of times, you know, look, I'm a writer, and if I'm hanging out with cops and doing a ride along or talking to them, they know they're talking to a writer.
Right.
So there's going to be a certain editing of what comes, self-editing on their part. I don't know what these guys talk about or how they act when I'm not there, when the writer's not there. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you hang out long enough, people give away so much. You know, there's so many tells. So I can just imagine what they're like with no writer there, because I'm writing about people, you know, without a recording secretary in the book. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing, you know, with the guys I hang out with in the projects, you know, the guys who had the families that are struggling there or you know, the guys that are doing, you know, stuff that they should be in jail. These guys know there's a writer there, and they're going to present a certain part, certain sense of self to me. But, you know, when I'm not there, you know, there's a duality that comes over people in the presence of a writer.
Yeah.
And but my job is called fiction. My job is to imagine me not being there.
Yeah. And in the book, in this book, The Whites, there's a group, and they're like the overnight shift. They're the ones who investigate what happens between, midnight and dawn or something. And
well, it's like 1 a.m. to 8 a.m., one squad of detectives that cover all of Manhattan from Wall Street to Harlem, because there are no local detective squads in New York working those hours. And they have to respond to everything. And I love that. I hung out with they're called the Night Squad. Mm-hmm. I mean, Night Watch, sorry, I don't even remember. Mm-hmm. Night Watch. And I hung out with them. And you never know, a call comes in. You know, it could be your wife calling up, don't forget the milk and the bananas. Or it could be, listen, we have a triple homicide on the street in Times Square. And it's just, it's like Ouija, the tabloid photographer in the 40s, that he just showed up at everything. And you never knew what was going to come over the phone. Mm-hmm. You never knew what you were going to.
Yeah.
And it was just, I just love the notion of just covering wee hour Manhattan. In terms of like felonies committed.
Yeah. Was Ouija kind of a model for you in terms of a journalistic approach?
Yeah, he was. He's like my favorite, not my favorite artistic photographer, but he was called Ouija because he got to crime scenes before the police often. And so they would say about him, what do you got, a Ouija board in there? You know, he had a police radio and he would just sit in a car all night in some central spot and make it to the scene before the cops did sometimes. And he had a dark room in the trunk of his car. He developed photos right on the spot.
Really?
And the most poignant telling instruments of New York at night.
Yeah, no, he was great. And these guys are called the Wild Geese, so they're like, they have their own little pack or something in the department.
Well, they did. Well, they started out 20 years earlier when they were young on the job, and they were, you know, in plainclothes anti-crime. And they were in the worst part of the Bronx, where I was born, and during the worst time of the worst part of the Bronx. And they were like street commandos. And that was their salad days. They were like in their 20s. They were ready for anything. But now the four out of five of them are retired. And the fifth guy, the main character, who's commanding Night Watch, he's pretty sedentary. And these are old cases, the whites that start showing up dead. And, you know, our hero, our guy, is just assuming that they've all been killed by his friends, the retired detectives who could never get their individual whites out of their mind.
No.
It's too obviously a pattern.
Yeah. So this is, and it gets so complicated and so interconnected. And did you really think you were going to get out of this just kind of straightforward kind of genre story once you started?
I did. You know? But there's a big difference between when you're outlining a book and,
right.
and figuring out and organizing. And then once you start writing, life takes over. You know, the minute you physically commit to the act of writing, these characters, I don't want to get romantic and say characters write themselves because they don't. I write them.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden you realize there's more depth to the guy. And these characters started expanding. And I started writing about domestic life, which I've never done before.
Mm-hmm.
And so that element of the main guy's life was a new element in books. And these characters just started getting fatter and richer. I don't mean like money-wise or weight-wise. I mean, they became broader characters for me. Then the book just became like another type of book I would write.
No.
I mean, the same type of book I would write.
Same type, yeah. And this Billy, well, isn't Billy sort of half-Jewish, too, or something like that? I don't know.
No. He's stone Irish.
Yeah.
His wife is Puerto Rican. One of his ex-partners is a woman who's Syrian, Turkish. One of his partners is a black guy from a funeral director family in Harlem.
Right.
Another guy is half Jewish, half Polish.
That's the guy.
The stalker, Billy, there's a stalker in the book.
Yeah.
Named Milton Ramos.
Right.
And Milton's half Jewish, half Puerto Rican. I mean, I tried to make it like the bar in Star Wars, you know.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I'm an equal opportunity employer here.
Yeah. Ramos is half Jewish?
Yeah, well, his first name is Milton.
Milton. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Who knew?
Yeah. I just want to make it as big of a ethnic and emotional mess as I can.
Yeah. Totally. But it's amazing. It's an amazing book. It's called The Whites. It's soon to be a movie too, right? Are you writing the screenplay for this as well?
Yeah. If they can find me, I'll write the movie. But you know, it's really rough to write scripts of your own book because you're too emotionally close.
Yeah. You're too tight.
You have to negotiate every sentence that you throw away. Whereas if I hadn't written a book, you know, I would have no personal connection to it, and I just chopped that thing up.
Yeah. Well, Harry Brandt wrote it. You didn't write it.
Yeah, yeah. And his evil brother, Skippy, his evil twin.
Can we expect a second Harry Brandt novel? Or?
Well, you know, I owe another book to another publisher. That comes first. But, yeah, I would like to revisit these characters, definitely.
Oh, cool.
Instead of the Whites, maybe I'll just call it The Purples.
The Purples. Well, this one is called The Whites. Richard, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us.
My pleasure.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure.
I'm going to go back to bed now.
I'll go back to bed. Richard Price, going back to bed, author of The Whites, ladies and gentlemen. It's on, let's see, what is that there? Henry Holt.